This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
With a Z. Welcome to Joy on Paper, a program for writers and those who dream of writing, and for everyone who wants to know the story behind the book, coming to you from a remote location somewhere here in glorious Clearwater, Florida, surrounded by books as I am, and thinking about all of you and praying that you are all staying strong through this terrible, terrible time. It is, how can I explain it in better terms? And this is a time that we need to be together, that we need to find some inspiration, and that we need, as I always said, to find that joy on paper, which is also a release on paper, because you for a little while, whether you are writing or whether you are reading, you can forget your current problems and maybe concentrate on something else and maybe find an inspiring book. So today I'm very happy to welcome to talk today about a book which I like the title. The minute I saw the title, it says Quest for Eternal Sunshine. Now, it's a Holocaust survivor's journey from darkness to light. And that's the important thing. It's from darkness to light. And we are all going through our own problems here, and to be inspired by this book, I think, will help you. And so that's why I'm happy to welcome to the program Myra Goodman. And who else is on the line there with you?
Just me, just Myra Goodman. My dad is my co-author, but he is watching from heaven.
I know. So, Myra, it is just great to talk to you. And as you said, Mendick Rubin, your father, is watching us. And I think his story is inspirational. And I so want you to tell my audience about it. Explain, because the wonderful thing, as you know, it's sometimes hard to see the sunshine, and right now we need inspiration, and I think you've written a beautiful, beautiful book. Explain how it started, and tell about your dad, and tell about his attitude.
Well, thank you so much. You know, this is a special interview for me because today is the release day of the book, and you are my first interview, so it feels like a really special day. My dad, Mendick, was born in Poland to a Hasidic Jewish family in 1924. So he grew up, you know, between the two world wars, lots of anti-Semitism, you know, flaring to an inferno during the Holocaust, where he survived 3 years as a starved, brutalized inmate in Nazi slave labor concentration camps. He was in seven different camps. While pretty much his whole family, he came from a family of six. His parents and all his siblings, except for one little sister, were murdered in Auschwitz. So he came to America in 1946 with a sixth grade education, no money, didn't speak any English, didn't have any marketable skills, and he was actually a brilliant inventor, a very imaginative, curious, sensitive person. And he ended up building this amazing life for himself in America. He invented all of these different ways to make clasps for bracelets in the jewelry industry. He had a successful business. He married my mom, love at first sight. They got married after 9 dates. But still, he suffered from deep, unrelenting depression for all of these decades and into middle age until he finally decided to apply his brilliant inventor's mechanical mind onto his own psyche and figure out ways to heal himself. And so he worked on a manuscript for a full decade in the 90s where he really outlined his roadmap to happiness. And English was his fourth language. He was dyslexic. He wasn't a writer. He wrote some beautiful, beautiful, powerful things, but he could never get it published. And he died in 2012. And I found his manuscript a few months after he died, And a couple of years later, I started working on it, and I researched and wrote for 4 full years, and then, you know, it was over a year to get it into this form, and today it's published, and Historian Wisdom is being shared with the world. So it's an exciting moment for me, and I feel like I fulfilled my dad's wish, because he always felt like he did not have a roadmap out of his darkness, and he discovered it himself, and he was very eager to share it.
Well, I tell you, Myra, this book is you've done a beautiful job of taking his words and your research and everything that you put together to write a very stirring and inspirational book. Now, my mother-in-law came from Poland, from Lublin. We made the journey there to Poland. So we were there. We were there for the 50th anniversary of the uprising of the Warsaw Ghetto.
Wow.
So we know what it was like there. She luckily escaped early. She became a pioneer and went to Israel at a young age, but all of her family stayed behind. So this book is particularly relevant to our family. And I was so honored, really, to be able to have you as a guest today on the release date, because I think it's an important book. And your father, I want you to tell us some of the things that he did, and also explain a little bit more how he was able to find a way to see the sunshine, and to that he can inspire now. He needs to inspire an entire generation here of people who are...
No, it's true. And it's interesting that you were talking about the Warsaw Ghetto, because I've been thinking about how, you know, it's the Holocaust Days of Remembrance coming out which is commemorated on April 21st this year. And part of the timing for it is the anniversary of the uprising of the Warsaw Ghetto. And I was really thinking, because I have my mother is still alive, she's an Auschwitz survivor, my aunt is still alive, she's an Auschwitz survivor, and it's so hard for us to understand what they lived through. And even though it's apples and oranges, you know, just being confined to our homes, just having all this fear and all this uncertainty and the bare store shelves, you know, I think we're better able to imagine what it was like for these Jews that were in the Warsaw Ghetto, you know, confined with barbed wire, no way to get out, no way to get enough food, not enough medical supplies, people, you know, dying all the time, such terrible overcrowded conditions. You know, in a sense, we're getting, as Americans, our first taste of you know, just a little bit of the essence of what it feels like, I think, during wartime. And I think it really enables us to be a little more compassionate and understanding of what happened not that long ago. I mean, it's my mom and she's still alive, you know. I think for my dad, they lived in New York, and in the 60s and 70s, they started, my mother and father started exploring a lot of the different therapies and self-help opportunities that were out there. They went to encounter groups. They tried hypnotherapy, Freudian therapy, Gestalt therapy. They actually joined a kind of alternative spiritual community that I grew up in from when I was 6 to when I was 13. So I have my history is also wrapped up in that. And I think in that those early years, what my dad really got was he got support to face his past and feel his emotions. And I think so much of that depression was a repression of, it was just too vast, too overwhelming to deal with the trauma that he had been through, all the loss that he had been through. And so I think until he could really learn that he was strong enough to experience his pain and not keep repressing it, I think that was a very important first step for him. And then he really observed how his mind just repeated these thoughts that made the world look, he kept projecting his past and the cruelty and the abuses of the Holocaust onto the present. And he wasn't seeing the world with fresh eyes. And he started realizing that if he changed his thought patterns and started focusing on what was beautiful, all of a sudden the world, he could start seeing the beauty. He started seeing how the world that he saw was really a projection of his inner state. and that what he thought and what he experienced wasn't really that different, that if he could really use his imagination and experience feeling beauty and feeling safety and think of all that is joyous that made him feel calm, he was really changing his inner atmosphere, and then the world looked different. So he did this whole process of going back in time, embracing his inner child. He really felt that until he could learn to love himself deeply, he couldn't heal his pain, he couldn't love other people. And so he slowly broke out of his emotional isolation. His depression fell away, and he literally became the happiest, most peaceful human being I have ever known, which is really part of my inspiration to share his story, is because his transformation was so remarkable.
Well, it is a beautiful story, and I was particularly, I found it very interesting that he became involved in agriculture, because I'm a true believer that nature and plants give you a good sense of being.
Exactly. When he was so connected to nature. Well, actually, you know, what the story is that when him and my mom retired to California, they sold their apartment in New York and they bought this little farm, because my mom had grown up on a farm in Hungary, and it was right when I graduated college, and I was going to go to graduate school, and me and my boyfriend then moved on to this little heirloom raspberry farm in Carmel Valley, and we fell in love, these city kids, with, you know, living in the country and the cycles of nature, and we started growing little baby lettuces, and we were actually the first company, our company was Earthbound Farm, to package pre-washed salads for retail sale. And my dad, who had just retired, is the one that invented all the equipment with things that he picked up at the junkyard, and he turned the living room of our little 800 square foot home into a salad packing factory. So people who are eating pre-washed salads somehow are actually connected to my dad, because he really helped launch us, and we were the first people to do that.
Well, I found the story delightful from several reasons, because when I was young, I was raised in northern Michigan, and I spent a lot of time as a little girl on my grandfather's farm. But then we moved to the city, and my little brother really never spent any time on the farm. And then about, I don't know, he was like 50 years old one day, he looked at his wife, and they were both, you know, executives in major corporations. He looked at his wife, and he said, you know, let's move back to the farm, then we can spend more time together. And they moved back to northern Michigan, where we still had our 40 acres, and nobody had farmed that land for years. And they knew nothing, like you. They were city people. They didn't know anything. But they found a calmness and a joy in working on the land. And they started growing those little mini potatoes, you know, the purple ones and all those ones.
Ah.
And so they became organic farmers for little mini potatoes that are sold in Chicago restaurants. But it is, there's something really, I think, when you get to the soil, when you get to growing things, that you start to see, too, the beauty of life reborn year after year.
You know, you're so right, especially when you have a background like us, where you're in the city. And I think, you know, I was in the 11th floor of an apartment in the middle of Manhattan. There were lights on. You know, I think that when you are living on the land and you're in harmony with the seasons. You know, that's, I think what mammals were kind of meant to be like. You wake up with the sun and you work until it's dark, and your days are shorter in the winter and longer in the summer. And you're so in tune with all the seasons and also the cycles of life, where, you know, things grow and then things die and things are dormant. And I think that it's so easy to forget that we're animals, you know, and that we have a certain biological rhythm, and that we feel healthier and calmer and more centered and grounded when we really do live in connection with the earth.
Well, I think your book is really an excellent book, very well written, very inspirational, and it's called Quest for Eternal. Holocaust Survivors, Journey from Darkness to Light. And it's by Mendick Rubin and Myra Goodman. And Myra, you know, you have a website or...
Yes, actually, I have. This has become more than a book. I am really following in my father's footsteps, wanting to share the wisdom. So I have on my website, questforeternalsunshine.com, I am sharing all these different resources for healing and self-discovery. I have a newsletter that goes out every Friday that shares different things about my dad's wisdom, lots of little nuggets of wisdom. So I would love your listeners to go to my website and sign up for my newsletter and explore what we have going on there.
Well, I will promote it. I will make sure that I send it out on my, you know, blast to my listeners and tell them about it, because I think this is a wonderful book. It's just, you know, it's something that people, I think they will be inspired in so many ways. And one of them, I have a feeling after this what we're going through, many people are going to start gardening. Suddenly people will realize, my goodness, you know, we have a yard, and we can't go shopping, but we have a yard and we could grow. And I think getting back to the land, getting back to growing and seeing life reborn will be a great help to our everybody's mind.
Yeah, I agree. That's really beautiful. It's also a nice way, you know, it's interesting because I kind of have my former career and my current career, and it's nice to see how it's very interwoven, you know, it's that they're still really connected. Yeah, and it's just, you know, what's nice about this book is that, you know, I think that a lot of Holocaust books are very dark, and they kind of bring you back to that awful energy of that time. And I think that this book is really, it says, from darkness to light. It really brings you into the light very, very quickly. And it's very inspirational. And I think that there's so many different traumas and so much different pain in the world. But when you look at what my dad endured and what he went through, and that he still had that freedom to choose to kind of change his patterns and have a beautiful, happy life, I think it inspires most people that no matter what they've been through, they have that choice and that opportunity as well.
Well, I want to wish you the best with the book. I will help promote it because I think it's a really inspirational book, and the best to your mother and your aunt and everybody in your family to get through this difficult time, and so that we can get back to eating salads, because I will now always think about your dad every time I buy a ready-made salad.
That's so sweet. This has been such a pleasure to talk to you, and thank you for all your kind words and all the wisdom you shared. And this was a wonderful way to kick off my release day. Thank you so much.
Okay. Well, thank you, Myra. And I'll have you back on perhaps on one of these anniversaries, and we can talk more about the book and inspire more people, okay?
Oh, I would love that. That would be a huge pleasure. Please, that would be great. Thank you.
Okay. Bye-bye now, Myra. Bye-bye.
Thank you.
Okay. Oh, it is. As she said, it is not a dark book. Sometimes you'll see something that say Holocaust, and you'll say, it's a dark. It's not at all. He was an amazing guy, wonderful inventor. And once you read this book, every time you go in the salad aisle, you'll think of him. You'll say, wow, how clever. And as you see, he invented, this is the beautiful thing about being, having this kind of thing where you're always thinking of something. In this case, Mendick Rubin came out with an idea to package salad and design a machine that could do it. He came out with it in his home. And that's why I want to tell you, if you are, while you're trying to think of something to do around the house, as you find a problem, if you have a problem that you can solve, an invention, you really have to contact Bill Larson of Larson & Larson. In a minute, we're going to play his ad. He is not only our sort of resident legal eagle, giving us all helpful advice on intellectual property. He is also my patent attorney. I have 4 patents. I'm going to have, as a matter of fact, we're filing a new patent today. I'm going to have my 5th patent. And so the important thing is, if you come out with an idea, do not use any of those people that advertise on television, because they will steal it in a second. You need to have it registered properly, and Bill Larson is the best patent lawyer. And I've worked with patent lawyers for 25 years, and I can tell you that Bill Larson is the very best patent lawyer in the world. He managed to get a patent for something that amazed me, because he saw the elements to my device that I didn't even see. And so Bill Larson is absolutely terrific. We're going to go to commercial, and we'll play Bill Larson's commercial, take note of it, and then I'm going to come back in a little while, and I have a great interview coming up with just in time for every young adult and middle-aged child who needs a book to read. Okay? So take it away, Ed.
This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
Have you ever faced disaster? The Red Cross is always there for you. The Red Cross responds to a call for help every 8 seconds. They have never turned anyone down. Now they need your financial support so that they can be ready to help you when the need arises. Donate online at redcross.org. Thank you.
Are you an author, an artist, an inventor? Then you need to protect your valuable intellectual property. You need Larson & Larson. We have the experience and knowledge to help you with all of your legal needs, from processing trademark, copyright, or patent applications, to negotiating licensing agreements and handling litigation. The attorneys at Larson & Larson in Largo, Florida, can help protect you. Call us today for a no-cost consultation at 727-546-0660 or visit our website at LarsonPatentLaw.com.
Do you dread being called on to speak at meetings or family functions? Have you envied those who can sway an audience with well-chosen words? Do you know that people who speak well earn more money, earn more recording careers? Gain the confidence to master any speaking situation. Toastmasters will allow you to find your voice. Go to Toastmasters.org to locate the club nearest you.
This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
Hi, this is Patsy with a Z, and I am back. And in a little while, I'm going to be talking to an author. My goodness, she is young and she is talented, and it's really exciting. So I'm just waiting for a call in from her. But meanwhile, I want to give you a little bit of advice. Okay, we all know that we have to wash our hands and wear a mask when we go out, and gloves. If you have gloves, that's fantastic, and go out as seldom as possible. But I had not thought of this, and it just occurred. Let's say a friend has a problem, and her toilet has backed up. Now, she did not do what I have now read about that people are doing. People who are out of toilet paper, I understand, are cutting up their T-shirts and using that and putting it in the toilet. Believe me, it doesn't work. You do not want to have a problem that you need to call in a plumber at this time. I don't know. They charge enough in regular times. If they, can you imagine the hazard pay you have to? It would be terrible. So please, please be careful, and don't do anything that will cause you to need a repairman. So because one, if you can find one. You just don't want one. It's because it's not easy. Nothing's easy right now. And I know in our building, for example, we only one person goes in the elevator at a time. Well, that's it. We just, by sort of everybody just decided nobody, you know, we have a small building. Just one person goes in at a time. So you have to do all these things to be careful and to just, I don't know. It's not easy. I do want to mention a few authors whose books I think are just absolutely the type of books that you can get lost in. And I would recommend C.J. Box. If you want really wonderful stories, start C.J. Box from the beginning. These books, which are set out in the West, and I think on Thursday I'm going to play one of his interviews, because I had one of my favorite interviews was with C.J. Box. He's just absolutely a delightful guy, and his books are set in the West, which I, right now, somehow, reading books set in the West where there aren't a lot of people around, it's, you know, like 50 miles between people and, you know, 75 miles between houses, that sounds awfully good right now. And so I was going through them. I have all of his books, and I was just sort of picking one up after another, and I said, this is really good. And they all are exciting. They all have, you know, wonderful storyline, and he's a great writer. So I would highly recommend C.J. Box. Of course, I also, for all of you people who are Jack Reacher fans, Lee Child's books, you can go back, there are 25 books, and you can start, because, as you know, his brother, Andrew Grant, who's now Andrew Child, was on my 5th anniversary program, and he was also a guest host here on Joy on Paper, and he's working, as a matter of fact, I think they just finished their first book together, and it'll be number 26 in the Jack Reacher, and then after that, a few more. I think that Andrew Child, or as I call him, Drew, I told him one day, I said, when I first met him, I said, you don't look like an Andrew to me, and you don't look like an Andy, and I'm going to call you Drew. And he said, okay. So ever since then, I've called him Drew. But the thing is, he's a wonderful writer, and I think he's going to do, as he said, he's Jack Reacher's biggest fan, because he was the first one to read when his brother decided to start writing the Jack Reacher series. His brother is older, of course, than Drew, and it was so funny. You know, all of you out there, sometimes you get fired from a job, or you lose your job, and like right now, of course, there are a lot of you. So maybe we're going to have a lot of books coming. Okay, hi. Do we have? Are we ready? Is Roshani there?
Yeah, hello.
Oh, hi, Roshani. Okay, well, I was just talking to my listeners, trying to encourage them to start reading books and keep their minds busy. And boy, oh boy, do you have a wonderful series here. And so I just want to introduce everybody to Roshani, I'm saying it right, Chokshi, right?
That's correct.
Okay, and it is a wonderful series, Arusha and the Three and the Tree of Wishes. The Tree of Wishes. Wow. Now, I just have to start first. You know, you are such an amazing success. You have, I don't know, like you have more success than as if you had been writing for 40 or 50 years. I mean, you are quite amazing.
Thank you very much.
Well, where do I start with this? First of all, this is a wonderful time for people to find a new author, if they haven't found you before, but to find this series, which really we need at this time, a series that sort of takes us away and into another plane, let's put it that way, another universe or another mindset. So tell us about this wonderful character that you've developed, because she's a kind of girl, 12 years old, she's a kind of girl that I think so many kids will relate to.
Oh, I really appreciate you saying that. I mean, Aru She's the protagonist of the series, Arusha and the End of Time. She starts off her adventures as a seventh grade girl in Atlanta, Georgia. I gave her a lot of the traits that I had when I was in middle school. I was also somebody with an overactive imagination, perhaps too much of a tendency to stretch the truth, we might say, and also just, you know, desperate to be exceptional or special in some way, and yet not really good at anything. So it's sort of a late bloomer in that sense. Aru finds out that she is a demigod and a reincarnation of one of these legendary heroes out of Hindu mythology. And her story is about finding her found family, other girls who are also reincarnations of these five legendary demigod brothers, as they get sucked into adventures about mythology and also find themselves questioning who is telling you the right story. I think that's really the core question of the series. People have always portrayed somebody as good and somebody as bad, but one of the wonderful things about Hindu mythology is that it has so much gray space. And so there's a lot of room to really play with what it means to be villainous and what it really means to be heroic. So that's something that the characters grapple with a lot.
Well, I think the Pandava sisters are so fascinating, and you just created such a wonderful and fascinating world around them. Now, I particularly love Indian mythology, because I have a particular passion for one city in India. And now, where's your family background from in India?
So my father's family is from Gujarat, and my mother's family is from the Philippines.
Okay, well, I know, now you know Baroda, which is...
Oh, yeah, that's where my dad grew up.
I had a feeling... I'm going to tell you, you know, when we talk sometimes about supernatural, something, this connection, I had a feeling that there was a connection between us, because I know Baroda so well. I could draw you a map of Baroda, of every street, of every house in Baroda in 1875.
What? That is amazing.
I have been doing research on Baroda for the past 5 years, or even longer.
Okay.
I know Baroda so well. It's funny, when I was reading your books, they sent me the new one, but I went back and I read the other ones, and I said, I don't know, I have this connection to this girl, and I'm saying, why do I feel so strongly that this girl is something important to me? See, you're Baroda, what are the chances? I'm from northern Michigan. I have no connection with India, except for the fact that I fell in love with a story about Baroda set in 1875, and I'm writing a book, 100,000 words right now, about Baroda.
Wow.
Isn't it amazing?
Yes. Well, it was such an interesting time and place in history, so that's fascinating.
And probably, maybe, your family's relatives are in my book. I mean, amazing.
That is so cool.
I am so thrilled. I don't know what your father's family did, but if they were at all involved in the courts or the police or a Grant Medical College, then they might be in my book.
That is so cool. And what a strange, fascinating choice, you know? That's really fascinating. I love that.
Isn't it? It's just so amazing. That's why I just fell in love with your books, and then the more I read about you, you know, I can't even, it's difficult for me to say about all the things you've done. Tell us more about you. Just talk about some of, how did you become so, well, I mean, you are such a big author now.
Oh, thank you. I was really, really fortunate to grow up in a family of such extraordinary storytellers. And so for me, I was always writing stories at a young age. So often of it was just me inserting myself into the fictional world of a character that I, of an author that I really loved. And, you know, for me, all of that writing really came from a place of wanting to be seen in stories, and so often feeling as though I had been erased from the narrative in one way. I never grew up finding stories where a protagonist looked like me or had a name like mine or a culture or a shared cultural background. And so writing was honestly about writing for a younger version of myself. And it wasn't until after I graduated college in 2013 that my book really came together. I'd written a lot of truly terrible drafts beforehand, but 2014 was when I got my act together and really ended up writing the book that would become my debut novel, Star-Touched Queen, which is a Beauty and the Beast retelling with Indian mythology. Uh-oh. Hello?
Betsy, can you hear us?
Can you hear me?
Yeah, I can hear you.
Okay, great. Because I wanted you to tell a little bit about the sort of backstory of Aru, about the Museum of Ancient Indian Art, about her mother, about what happened. I thought the whole thing is so clever. And you write that, you know, she, of course the character is Indian, but it could be any girl in the world has this kind of feeling, like you know, there's something you want to do, something more to that you need to know. So explain more about this story.
Oh, thank you. The story really came about, again, I was heavily inspired by the stories my grandmother had told me. And more particularly, it's inspired by the Mahabharata, which is an ancient Sanskrit epic. And at the core of the story, it is about five legendary demigod brothers. And it's about their adventures as they encounter members of the Hindu pantheon and also have experiences with gods and goddesses. And so what I wanted to do was retell those stories and make it modern. So in Aru's version, those legendary Pandava brothers are now reincarnated as sisters, and they all start off as 12-year-old girls. And every book, she finds a new member of her found family and goes on those similar sort of adventures.
And I just, as I said, when I started reading this book, and, you know, she's sort of fibbing about things. This is in the first book. And she's, caught up in all of this. I thought, whoa, the whole concept was just brilliant.
Oh, thank you. She was such a delightful character to write. I mean, I've read so many stories where someone is very brave and noble and, solemnly taking off the mantle of what it means to be a hero. But Aru is not that character. She is the one that's awkwardly quoting lines from Zoolander, doesn't want to be there. She's going to be a demigod. Is somebody going to give her a cool flaming sword? She's pretty much wholly unequipped to be a hero. And that's what makes her story so fun to write, as she stumbles, bumbles, and laughs her way through.
And so fun to read. Really so fun to read. Sometimes I get such a kick out of when in the first book she was 12. She's 14 now, right? In the new book, she's older, right?
Yeah.
I get such a kick out of finding a character who I just love.
Oh, thank you. She was really, really just. She's so much fun to write, and you know, it was a joy to be able to give a character so many aspects of my own life. I mean, my other stories have taken place in ancient India, my other young adult series, The Gilded Wolves, which the second book is coming out in September, that takes place in 19th century Paris and is a treasure hunting story. But Aru is a tale that takes place modern time in Atlanta, Georgia, the same place where I grew up, the place where she lives. She grows up in the Museum of Ancient Indian Art and Culture, which is loosely based off of one of my favorite museums, which is the Carlos Museum on Emory University's campus, which is where I went to college. So it has so many prints of my own life that the story became very personal for me.
Well, I think you've done a brilliant job with it, and I know that it's going to find a wide audience, and it's been picked up. Has it been picked up for film, for a streaming video or something yet?
Yes, it's been optioned for film by Paramount Pictures. So, you know, Hollywood things are always sort of hit or miss. You never quite know what's happening. But
no kidding. I was a script writer in Hollywood, so I know what it is. But here's the thing.
Yes.
As I was reading it, as I read the first book, the third book, and then I went back to the first book, I saw it in my head as a film. So that's always a good sign.
Wonderful.
And I can see it.
Thank you.
It means I would just love to, you know, see it on the screen because you write so beautifully. And then it's really, I just think it's so magical. Now, do you know, of all the cities, there are a lot of cities in India, of all the cities that your father could come from, that he would come from Baroda, which is so dear to my heart. I think of Baroda every day. I look at the map of Baroda every day. It is something I write about almost every day. And I'm actually trying to learn, well, I can write Gujarati. I can write I learned how to write it. Do you do that?
I can't. You are amazing.
Because this story means so much to me because it is a wonderful story about fantastic Indians who were, how can I say, they managed to bamboozle and trick and do some fun stuff with the English, and so it's a great story, and
I love that I'm
so thrilled just to talk. I love these connections that make me connected to an author, and so we now have this connection, and I think it's fantastic.
Oh, thank you so much. I really do appreciate the support for my stories. It means a ton.
Well, you know, it's important at this time, as I said, I normally go around to parents groups. I do a lot of speeches. I go to library groups because I love to encourage young people to read and to write. And I often have young authors, local young authors, come on my program because I want to encourage them to write. And I think that you are just a fantastic example of what somebody who is, you know, it's not easy to be a writer. You have to have this dedication, right?
Mm-hmm. Yes, absolutely.
But when you, if you have a story in your heart and in your head to work on it, it really is a joy on paper, isn't it?
Oh, there's nothing more rewarding than realizing that this thing that has lived inside your heart for so long is finally real. So I'm really deeply grateful that I get to do this.
Well, it's also talent. You have amazing talent. And I think that sometimes these things just happen in life, that something just sort of, with all that you write about, the connections, sometimes just, it's magical, isn't it?
Yeah. Absolutely, yes.
And I want just, tell people where they can go. Of course, the books are on Amazon and Barnes & Noble, but do you have a website?
Mm-hmm. I do, yes. My website is my first and last name, Roshani Chokshi, which is spelled roshanichokshi.com. You can also find me on Twitter and Instagram, where I'm often talking about writing or sharing pictures of my cat, Teddy.
Well, you know, this is a wonderful thing, and I think particularly for young people, it's really difficult right now for them to be isolated and to feel isolated. Oh, yeah. But I think if they read about Aru and they can relate to these stories, it will be a great release for them and a wonderful, they will actually find that they forget for a little while their current problems and worry more about what's going to happen to her, what's she going to do next. And I think that's what makes your book so much fun.
Thank you so much. I really appreciate it.
Well, again, thank you so much, you know, for being on Joy on Paper today. I think you are so talented. And you have a new book coming out in, you said, September?
Yes, I do. Yes, I do.
Okay. Well, you make sure that you have your publicist send me the date, and I will have you on your opening date for that one, too. Okay, your release date.
Oh, thank you.
We can talk. And meanwhile, we can talk more perhaps about Baroda, because I think you will enjoy my book because it is fun. And I would love to know if your father's family had any background in the law or in medicine, or because I'm covering all of that in my book. And it's really an exciting book about Baroda and about India and about really wonderful, wonderful story. So, again, I want to thank you so much for being on Joy on Paper today. And the name of the book is Arusha and the Tree of Wishes. And it's the third book, and it's by Roshani Chokshi. And Roshani, thank you so much for being on Joy on Paper today.
Thank you so much for having me. It was a blast. Take care.
Okay, you too. Bye-bye now. Oh, wow. This is amazing. Isn't it amazing? My goodness. There, can you believe that? Of all the cities and all the world in India, there she is. Her father is from Baroda, which is the name of my book is Baroda. So it's going to be fun. I'm going to have to contact her. Maybe I can meet her father. This is the wonderful thing about Joy on Paper. All of these connections, all of these wonderful, wonderful people that I get to talk to, people that I meet, and people that I hope I put you in touch with, because the important thing is for you to get involved. I've talked so much about the wonderful authors that I've interviewed, and you can go to my webpage, which is radio-joyonpaper.com, and listen to some of my interviews. I have interviews there that are really and so inspirational and so fascinating. And what I hope that they do for you is encourage you to write. Because you never know. I mean, here, for example, you might have a story in your family about, I don't know, a war, a Holocaust, an inventor, or something. And nobody's bothered to write the story yet, but you are there. You have time now. You have no excuse. I know it's hard to concentrate sometimes, but what you find, and this is absolutely true with research, and the wonderful thing, we have the internet, so you can do research. You can go, if you're doing a story about your family, go to the Ellis Island website, and there you can track, all of the family members that came from anywhere, in particular Europe, of course, and they came to Ellis Island. You can follow them, and then you go on and move on to the Census Bureau, and you can follow them across the United States as they go from one city to another. It's really quite exciting to do that kind of research. And then you start with that. You then go to, there are databases for churches, for schools, you look up yearbooks. It's just a wonderful way to keep your mind busy. And you might not right now perhaps be able to write the story. You might like, I can't concentrate on writing something creative, but you can do the research. And if you can do the research, that alone will just make you feel so good. You'll start writing and you'll do the research and you'll say, wow, I have all this interesting stuff to talk about in a book, and the day will come when you'll just have that moment, and you'll be inspired, and you'll sit down, and suddenly you'll start writing, and you'll take a breath, and you'll say, wow, this is amazing. I really can do it. But again, you have to just start, and even though we have all these problems, and we're you know, you have to be careful. Please, everybody, be careful out there, and just be kind to each other. You know, in the end, I think this next generation is going to be called the V generation, because it's virus, victory, and virtue. Because we have to be good to each other. We have to be kind to each other. Take time to call your relatives and to just catch up. And if you have relatives that you haven't talked to for years, get over it. Call them and talk to them. Or friends that you sort of dropped. You didn't bother to go to your class reunions. And maybe you had hurt feelings. Somebody called you fat once, or somebody called you stupid once, or somebody, forget it. Just find the joy in knowing people and just get back in touch. And that's the wonderful thing, that we are able to do that. And to make perhaps new friends too. People that we sort of were casually acquainted with might become good new friends. So there are lots of things that you can do, because, you know, as I have always told you, that really one of the joys of life is to see your words on paper or to hear them spoken in an audible book. And I am listening to quite a few audible books, because I'm sick and tired, to tell you the truth, of most of the television. I can't deal with it. I can't even deal with advertisements. So audible books are absolutely fantastic, and there are so many that you just should get and just listen to. And then, you know, you never know, if you start writing a page a day, or right now you could do easily 8 pages a day, in no time you'll have a book. And then one day you might hear those magic words, lights, camera, action, and your book will be turned into a streaming video, or a major motion picture, or, I don't know, even a television series. And I want to say a special hello to my goddaughter, Kanisha. Kanisha, thank you for your wonderful messages. She is one of the joys of my life. I found her. I met her because of Joy on Paper. And I love Kanisha. I want to thank you so much for your messages. Also, my son, up there in Madison, where it's 26 degrees. I don't know why he wants 26 degrees. I don't want 26 degrees. So special to my baby. Special hello to him and to all of you out there, and all of the wonderful messages I've gotten. I've gotten so many kind and just wonderful messages. Thank you so much. And I'll say something nice to Big Ed in the control room. Thank you, Ed, for everything. I'm saluting you, and I think he's saluting me, because that's what he likes to do. And I really, really miss all of you from the point of view. I want to be back in the studio soon. Okay, bye-bye, everybody. Go ahead, Ed. Take it away with the music. And thank you so much. Bye-bye.